It was a loaded night. NBA playoff action, NHL playoff action. Obviously, very kind to the New York Islanders. And our next guest, let's just say he got on board the aisle train exactly when you needed to get on board the aisle train. So let's talk some playoff basketball, hockey, sharp sense, Vegas sense. One of my favorites, Jared Smith over at Sports Grid. Smitty, what's happening, bro?
JJ, May 28th, that's the day I made the Isles bet. May 28th. I think we talked about it on the show right around then, and we were kind of capping the restart and how, you know, the time off would help some of these injured players like a Pelic and a guy get back to health. And they have overachieved the Isles, any expectation we ever could have had. 60-1 was the price on the ticket.
Oh, my goodness. Say that one more time for the audience, for those of them maybe keeping score at home. 60-1?
60-1. May 28th, the ticket was placed, and I do this all the time where, and it's I think of it like a dividend reinvestment strategy. I have a good day. I win a couple of solo bets. I look into the futures market, and I try to reinvest that money either in positions I already have or try to create new positions. So it's a constant reinvestment strategy. The Isles was actually just a straight, like, hey, this team is going to benefit from the restart. And I remember we did a segment, it was right around then where we were talking about this, and I didn't think that they would play this well. I mean, JJ, they have looked, the game tonight, the first period of that game looked like a varsity versus JV team. I mean, the Isles were just right where they needed to be, executed perfectly. They played one of the better games I think they played in the entire restart. They've scored the most goals in so far in the bubble. I mean, they look like a championship contender. Now, there's some good teams left in the field, Vegas for one, but there are some really, really positive things happening with the Islanders right now.
Now, I think it goes without saying, the series price for the Islanders and the Flyers was basically right around even money. I think I locked in the Islanders, Jared, at right around 105, 110. I think it was 110 is where I got the Islanders. So after game one, for maybe somebody who's listening right now who missed the boat, would you suggest get on the Islanders for game two? Or maybe hope and pray Philadelphia takes them down and then you get it at more of a discounted rate. How would you go about that?
That's a good question, because from a value perspective, you're going to lose it on the Isles. Now, I am curious, that being said, when they do hang a new series number. I was actually talking about this with your boy Carver High very recently.
I'm going to say the Islanders, Jared, just guessing right now, are going to be like minus 155, 160. Is that fair?
I thought I was going to say, and it's funny you said that, I told Carver if it's shorter than 150, meaning it's 140 or 130, I'm going to hop on the aisle. 150 was a good dividing line for me. So I think that's a good way to play it. If you look at the money line for game two right now, I'm looking on FanDuel and I see plus 105 for the Isles. You look on the series price and you're like, all right, this is minus 150. If you bet the Isles money line in game two and they win game two, the series price is almost unbettable at that point. It's going to go somewhere 200 or 300, and you can't really touch it. So I would almost say split your action. I would say split the difference. You take a little plus money on the Isles in game two. You take a little bit on the series price. If you lose the money line bet, you will be able to come back on the Islanders for a better price. If you win the money line bet, well, that's great. You won half your bet at plus money, and you've got the other half riding on an Isle series bet where they're up 2-0. So that's how I would play it. I would almost split your action a little bit because I think there is a hair of value on both sides, but I don't think that it's definitive one side or the other. The Islanders, I mean, goodness gracious, if they stay out of the penalty box, JJ, they might not lose for the rest of the postseason. They look like clearly the superior team. They looked it against the Caps, and the Caps stole one game, and that was it. I think this series has the makings, unless Philly makes some major adjustments with Alain Vigneault, you know, going into game two. This series has the makings of that with how good the Isles look tonight.
Jared, Isles aside, is there anybody that you would advise getting involved with from a series price standpoint, from a futures standpoint? Anything catch your eye aside from them in the NFL, in the NHL?
Tampa Bay is a little curious. I mean, I know, you know, what happened in game one. You look at the result and they lost the game. But they're outplayed Boston in the third period. And I love the idea of getting momentum heading into the next game. So if you don't want to play the Lightning on the money line later tonight or tomorrow night, depending on when you're listening to this, it's basically an even pick 'em. You can get the series price at plus 164, plus 170, somewhere in that price. I do think Tampa Bay is the superior team in this series. Boston's got a little bit of the momentum right now. But I don't know how Yaroslav Halak's going to be able to hold up. There's a weird quirk in this series, JJ, where there's a lot of back-to-back games. And usually the goalies don't play back-to-back. We all know about Tuukka Rask. He's not with the team anymore. So it's Halak, and then it's a scrub behind him as the third-string goalie. So they need Halak to be on point. And I don't know if that's going to be the case on the back-to-backs. His record on back-to-backs are not great. So I think there is some value Tampa Bay at a little plus money. Besides that, I mean, Vegas is a runaway freight train. They were overpriced to start the series, and they're going to continue to be overpriced. I think Tampa Bay, though, you can get a hair of value still on the Lightning.
Jay, let's get to the NBA. And I advised everybody last week, when the Lakers lost Game 1 to the Portland Trailblazers, to hop on the series price. It was like -240, -250. And the thought process was, there's no way in the world LeBron James and company are losing in the first round. If I'm going to lay 250 and LeBron is going to lose in the first time in his NBA career, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tip my cap. I'm going to say it was not my time, and I'm going to truck that one up as a big fat L. Now, I was very confident the Lakers would still win the series, but I never in a million years thought it would be as easy as it has been over these last three games. Are you surprised with the ease the Lakers have won Game 2, Game 3, and Game 4?
I think the Blazers have ran out of gas. I mean, I think we see this sometimes with teams that make these gigantic playoff runs, and even to kind of make it a little more, you know, a little more specific, we see it in games as well, where a team's down 20 points in the first half, they grind their way back, and then in the fourth quarter and overtime, they just can't get that final push to get over the hump. Now, the Blazers were up against a massive, you know, David versus Goliath against the Lakers with these bigs up front, and McGee and Howard and Davis. They just bludgeon you. And Portland was throwing Hassan Whiteside and Nurkic at him, and it just it was like throwing a rock in a castle. It's not going to make a dent. So I think the Blazers wore down a little bit physically, and then the Dame Lillard injury started to pop up, the dislocated finger, which, you know, he looked fine, but he said after the game, after Game 3, that he couldn't feel the ball when he was driving with his left hand, and his left hand is his guide hand on his shooting hand. So he went 2-for-9 in the second half of that game, and then left tonight because of the MRI on his knee. So the injuries are mounting. I think the Blazers are wearing down. I loved how you played the Lakers, by the way. That is the way to play it. That is exactly how I played it in Game 2. So the Lakers series price, I got it at -220. And the money line in Game 2 for the Lakers was -300. So I'm thinking to myself, why am I going to pay -300? I don't like laying a lot of points in the NBA. I like to play money lines. So why am I going to lay -300 when I can get the series price at -220.
And no doubt, because you like them in Game 2, Jared. I'd say you like them in a series.
Exactly. And that was my logic. I said if they win Game 2, they are winning this series. I mean, plain and simple. So why would I lay 80 more cents to get the Lakers at -300 when I can just bet the series price at -220? Now you have to sit on that money for a little bit longer. It's going to end up being about 4 or 5 days between the Game 2 win and when they probably close it out in Game 5. But when you're playing the long game in gambling, which I am, that 80 cents you save is 80 cents you can spend in other places and you can allocate elsewhere. So I recommend doing that as much as possible. If you think you can get a better price somewhere, the price in gambling, JJ, is everything. I mean, the big is how the books make their money. So if you can get a better price, you should always try to, you know, finagle your way into a better number.
My buddy Jared Smith, check him out over at Sports Grid, where going over some odds in the NHL and the NBA postseason. And Jared, obviously now the Rocket-Thunder series has gotten rather competitive. And I expected a tight series. I thought the series price line indicated as such. I mean, OKC was like +135, 140. Saw Houston right around 160. But when you see the Rockets go and dominate the first two games, you're thinking, right, the Thunder just going to roll over and die. Did not happen. They win the dramatic Game 3. They have the comeback here in Game 4. And I think for the NBA standpoint, they really need the Rockets to win. I'm sorry. I want absolutely no part of seeing OKC in the second round, because I think that's a total layup for the Los Angeles Lakers. Jared, I get the sense, though, that initial series price line being as low as it was for Houston moves you in a direction with Oklahoma City. Is that fair?
100%. So we've had four games in this series. The Sharps have been on Oklahoma City in all four games. And it's not a surprising thing if you think about it, because the public is, you know, tends to back the Rockets when they're facing a non-Lakers, non, you know, big name type of team, because the public likes backing the Rockets because they have James Harden, who scores a lot of points, and they shoot a lot of threes, and that's just a popular pick. So inherently, there's always a shade of value on the other side. So the Sharps do like the Thunder in this series. I'm on the Thunder in this series. I bet them in 6 and in 7 at 6-1 apiece. Because I knew that if they won this series, it was not going to be a 4-game or a 5-game series. This was 6 or 7 written all over it. It's obviously going to go at least 6. I do think it will go 7. I think this is going to be one of those. I think we were supposed to get one. You always get one series in the first round. I think this is it. The other ones seem to be pretty one-sided or over already. And I think this is our one series. And the star of this series, I think, I mean, you want to talk about a guy like Gallinari, you want to talk about a guy like Chris Paul. On the other side, you want to talk about, Harden or Westbrook. No, I want to talk about Lugans Dort, who arguably maybe is the second or third best on-ball defender in the league right now. I'm still putting Kawhi at the top, but Dort is locking down James Harden. I mean, Harden went 6-for-15 from 3 today. They made a bunch of threes in that one little stretch, but Dort has been the guy in Harden's grill. And the thing about Dort that impresses me, first of all, he's undrafted, which is very impressive. The second thing is he doesn't need help. And when you're dealing with the Rockets and this micro ball that they play, you can't switch every. You have to be versatile defensively, and Dort can not only guard Harden, but he also doesn't need help when they switch and they play that high pick and roll. So it's just a perfect matchup for the Thunder, and I think the Rockets are going to struggle for the rest of the series. Dort didn't play in Game 1, and that's one of the games the Rockets won. He's played in Game 2, Game 3, and Game 4, and the series has continuously tilted in the Thunder's direction since he came back. So that's the guy to watch for OKC, and I'm with the Sharps. I mean, I think the Thunder are the sharper team, no pun intended. I think Billy Donovan's a very underrated coach, and they've got some guys, man. Steven Adams is a horse in the middle. Chris Paul just continues to make clutch shots in big moments, and Gilgeous Alexander is becoming a star in this league, and of course, we all know about Danilo Gallinari, and then Dennis Schroeder with 30 off the bench today. I mean, this team has guys, JJ.
No question. Now, I'm going to throw a little scenario at you. One of these teams is down 3-1. The other is tied 2-apiece, but they're going up against quite possibly the best team talent-wise in the league. Jared, who is the more live underdog at this point? Would it be Denver down 3-1, needing a whole lot of things to happen if they're going to take down the Utah Jazz? Or would it be Luka Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis and his gimpy injury condition, and those well-coached Dallas Mavericks? Who has a better chance, in Jared Smith's opinion, to get out of the first round, Dallas or Denver?
I mean, it's probably the easiest question you've ever asked me. I mean, if you're going to ask me, do I want to take a Nuggets team that just continues to give up, you know, bad possession after bad possession defensively, or a Mavericks team with arguably the best player in the league right now, I got to go with the Mavs, JJ. And I know it's the uphill battle, and you got Porzingis, who's, I don't know if he's quitting on the team or his knee really is sore. It better be really sore to miss a playoff game. But what Luka did the other night will go down as one of those moments when you look back on the playoff lore. You know, I mean, he's in the same breath as the shot. I mean, how many times do we replay that Michael Jordan shot in everywhere, social media, GIFs, whatever? And he's now in that category in terms of a playoff performance like that with a game-winning shot. So I think Doncic is becoming a transcendent player in the league. I think he's going to be the favorite, or if not the second favorite, to be the MVP next year. And right now, the Mavericks, I'm seeing 2.5, 3-1 on the money line for them to win the series. Meanwhile, the Nuggets are 10, 11-1. So I think the Nuggets defensively are a lost cause. The Mavericks also have a lot of problems, but they have Luka Doncic and no one else does. So I've got to go Dallas there.
Jared, let's get to the Eastern Conference. No surprises here. You have Milwaukee, who's going to advance. Miami, who wins this series in ease over the Indiana Pacers. Boston, after Philly's no-show and no Ben Simmons. And then, of course, the Toronto Raptors. I don't know about you, but I'm looking to fade the Milwaukee Bucks any which way I can. I did not like what I saw in this first-round series, despite the end result. I did not like what I saw at the end of, you know, the regular season. And as terrific as Giannis may be, I get haunted by what happened last year against Kawhi Leonard and the Toronto Raptors. I would take the field against the Bucks. I think we're in agreement on that. But out of these other teams you could consider, Boston, Toronto, Miami, who are we getting involved with, my friend?
Miami is the team number-wise. I mean, we were Kevin Walsh, who hosts one of the basketball shows on Sports Grid, we do a lot of segments together. It was probably back in January we were touting the Heat at 50-1 to be that other team, and that was before they added, you know, Iguodala, you know, guys like that, Jay Crowder, who just, you know, they just make big shots. They make big plays in big moments. Like, you talk about a team that was already deep and young. And that was my knock on the Heat, and that's why I thought 50-1 was a long shot, because you got Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero, and these guys have never been down the stretch of a playoff game and needed that big moment, that big play. Well, then all of a sudden you add Andre Iguodala, former Finals MVP, and Jay Crowder, who's just dripping with big shots and big threes and big moments. And all of a sudden, this is now a complete team. And I think Jimmy Butler has found his niche. I think Miami is the perfect fit for him. Philly was not a great fit for him. It was a little too rugged. Miami is a little more laid back. And I think Eric Spoelstra is playing chess and everyone else is playing checkers. And the whole Heat organization has been doing that for years, Pat Riley. So I think Miami is ripe. They're 21-1. I'm seeing them on FanDuel. I think there's other markets that you might be able to get a better price on them. 50-1 was the peak number. It's steadily come down. It was, I think it started the restart at 33-1, and it's steadily come down since. They are a perfect matchup for Milwaukee. I mean, you want to talk about a team that is long, that is gritty, that draws up good game plans. It's going to make Giannis feel like he just has a torture chamber. The Heat are, I mean, whatever that price is against the Bucks, it's probably going to be 2-1.
Well, I was going to say, what do you think we're getting that price at, Jared? I think Milwaukee is going to be a -300 favorite. I do,
yeah,
because I think people will be lining up to bet the Bucks.
Yeah, I think -280, -300, +220. Let's just leave it at this. If it's like +190, then you know that Miami's a live dog. I mean, if they book this thing at under 200 and they make it, you have to kind of think about it. Like, oh man, like Miami's not as long of an underdog as I thought they were going to be. Then you know that I think the bet's even better, because if they book this thing where they give you any inkling that Milwaukee has value, meaning, man, I'm surprised Milwaukee isn't favored by more, then to me it's an auto bet for Miami, because then they're enticing the Milwaukee action, and they're going to get it. You're right. They're going to get that Giannis action for sure. I think Miami's been undervalued all year. I also think Toronto's been undervalued this year, JJ. I mean, you talk about a team losing their best player, but they still have their best weapon, which is Nick Nurse, who is, you know, he got crowned coach of the year, certainly deserving of it, and he is done an unbelievable job with this team. They made the Brooklyn Nets, who played pretty well in the bubble. I mean, this was a Nets team that no one thought was going to win a game. They went 5-3, and they made them look just foolish. I mean, just absolutely demolished. Dropped 150 the other day in the sweep. So Toronto's dangerous. Miami is dangerous. Boston obviously is scary with Brad Stevens, but I worry about their depth with no Gordon Hayward now, who continues to struggle to stay on the floor. So I would lean Miami and Toronto as my two teams opposite the Bucks, if you want to take the field.
Well, listen, Jared, I like the sound of that, considering I have a Miami ticket and I have a Toronto ticket to go and win the Eastern Conference. You think that the Raptor -145 series price against Boston fair?
Yeah, that's fair. But I want to know what the deal is with Kyle Lowry. I don't know if we heard anything today. I was too.
No, that's happy. A biggie to me. See, Jared, I'd have a little bit of cold feet throwing a wager down on that, unless I know the deal. Because if he does 100%. Not play in that series, and then all of a sudden Kemba Walker, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum can go to work, I think that could make the series far more challenging from a Toronto standpoint.
Totally agree. Now, if there is one team in the bubble that is equipped to handle this, it is Toronto, who played like 11 deep during the regular season. I mean, they were just unbelievable during the regular season. But I do agree 100%. If they are not 100% healthy, it makes Boston's lack of depth not an edge. And even still, I mean, I'm looking at the box score from the game the other night, and it was a bit of a weird game because they were up by a million against the Nets. But they played like 15 guys in this game. So they have no problem, Nick Nurse, emptying the bench. I think Nick will figure out a way to mute any issues and maybe protect Van Fleet a little bit. That's the bigger issue for me, JJ. Fred VanVleet has really emerged as the main scoring threat on this team. If you take Lowry's penetration away and you, all of a sudden your lineup is Van Fleet along with a guy like, I don't know, a Terrence Davis or maybe an OG Anunoby who doesn't have that on-ball skills, and you make Van Fleet the main ball handler. You take away his scoring prowess, and I think it makes Toronto a much more muted offense. So it matters not only to what Lowry can do production-wise, but how the rest of these players all fit together. And Toronto, more so than almost any other team, it's so important. The sum of the parts are bigger than any individual player. So I agree. I think the Lowry news is something that will very much tip the scales in this series.
My buddy Jared Smith over at Sports Grid. Jared, before we get you out of here, is it time for us to wave the white flag on those hapless Cincinnati Reds?
Maybe. I don't know. I'll say this about the Reds. Just keep betting the Trevor Bauer K-props. And
well, I got to give you credit. We gave you some love, by the way, on Odds on Sports because you were all over that prop tonight. And even on a night in which Trevor Bauer was not at his very best, still goes over for you, pal.
Well, that's the beauty of the K-props, JJ, is that when if you're sitting there and you're holding a Reds money line ticket in the fourth or fifth inning and Bauer's given up two homers, he looks brutal and they're down 4-0, you're tearing the ticket up. But if you're holding a K-props ticket, well, hey, you know, all he's got to do is strike out the side and he's got, you know, 20, 30 bullets left in the chamber. You never know. So the K-props are, I think, the best market to play baseball. I think these teams stick to their averages. The Braves are a high strikeout team. You got Gerrit Cole tomorrow. That'll be a number that'll be probably pretty high, but it might be worth playing anyways. So you get these teams that just strike out a lot, and you get these pitchers that just have high K rates. The analytics in Major League Baseball, they lay it out really clear. Bauer striking out 44% of the batters he faces. So, you know, if he gets to a certain number of batters, as long as he goes deep enough in the game, the numbers usually tell the story.
Are you playing anybody from a particular future right now in baseball?
Well,
the value that we should be looking to pounce on?
I other than this prop that I hit with the 20 home runs in a season, that was probably the best. I wish I could have emptied my entire account on it, but they only let you put so much on these props.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah, because, I mean, think about it. Tatis has, what, 12 already? And it's not even Labor Day? I mean, you know, you got guys like Judge who unfortunately has to miss some time, but even Voigt got double digits. I mean, you might have 5 to 10 guys that hit 20 home runs this season. The baseball futures market is a strange one this year, JJ. This is – so for the first time ever, more teams will make than miss the playoffs. And it's not even close. Like, it's by a significant margin. Like, you go from the small playoff pool that we had in baseball to the bigger one. It definitely muddies the waters. I think the Padres certainly have life at 30-1. I think the teams at the top are going to be right there, Yankees, Dodgers. The Twins, I'm worried about their pitching. The Braves, I'm worried about their pitching. The A's can't really get over the hump. Astros are 14-1. I mean, I know it's the bad karma train, but – you know, talent-wise, they're certainly there. I would put them ahead of Atlanta and Oakland in terms of their talent pool. Minnesota, too. So, I they get Verlander back and make a stretch run. Maybe the Astros have a little value, 14-1, but I don't think that's going to go over well, too. It's not going to go over well with this audience.
Nah, I understand that. But, hey, if there's an opportunity to make money, there's an opportunity
money.
To make money, Jared. Listen, appreciate the time. Continued success. We'll be watching over on Sports Grid, and I think you and I will be riding the Miami Heat together in the next round. So let's go.
I have a feeling. And I have a feeling we'll have plenty more times to talk about how good the Heat are against the Bucks.
You ain't kidding. Jared, good stuff, man. Take care, all right?
Man. Good stuff.
There you have it. That's Jared Smith over at Sports Grid.